I noticed Richard Fitzwilliams has also been writing in The Standard about how Prince Charles is actually adopting the Namaste greeting. Anyway, I recognise the importance and divine in your good self, Gabriella, although personally I prefer Idic, Infinite Diversity and Infinite Combinations, the traditional Vulcan greeting. Don't shake hands. It's very important. Yeah, exactly.
I've actually seen that in practice.
Yes.
People do that.
So this is it. You see, it's much more elegant, I think, than bumping elbows or various other things.
I've had elbow bumps and the Wuhan shake, which is the one with the feet.
Yes.
So you bump feet.
Yeah. And bumping fists, I think you might as well shake hands, really, if you're going to bump fists. I mean, that's ridiculous.
That's it,
really.
Just spreading diseases.
That's very true. Anyway, the one certainty of life is that the weather forecast for Lincoln, England from Gibraltar is about to be delivered by yourself. Take it away, please.
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln today is highs of 10 degrees centigrade, lows of 3 degrees centigrade, and it's a sunny day with strong winds.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
And our veterinary expert, of course, Zoe Jameson, was actually asked last night on the programme, can pets also get the coronavirus? I think there is a suggestion that canines might be prone to this.
Yeah, so
just beware with Frodo, because, you know, how could you live with the guilt if he suddenly went down with coronavirus and, oh, Lord above, you know, it'd be too tremendous, you know, all the fault of human beings.
How do you self-isolate a dog, though, you know?
Maybe actually have one of those kind of hazmat suits made for canines that could be sort of, you know, you could have like a little, or indeed just a kind of big plastic bubble that you're on a kind of skateboard that you could wheel along with him, so he could actually move his little legs as he was kind of driving along. Just a thought.
That could work.
Yeah, well, that's right. So, turning, I mean, we obviously this is the story that keeps on giving and probably will continue to do so for the next few weeks, etc. We heard the news, a considerable portion actually given over to the COVID-19 and coronavirus challenge. Once again, you're ahead of the game, I see, Gabriella, in terms of obviously not just working from home, but obviously you're not going to have any Americans coming to see Gibraltar in any way, shape or form.
They banned travel to Europe, haven't they? They're not going to be around for a while, but it's probably best for everyone that everyone stops moving around. Gibraltar's been really strict, actually, for a long time. But in the UK, when you came back from risk countries, you didn't have to self-isolate unless you had symptoms. In Gibraltar, you had to. Doesn't matter if you had symptoms or not, doesn't matter if you were only in the country for a connecting flight and in the airport for 2 hours, you self-isolated. So we've had one case, we haven't had any cases since, but now with Spain having so many cases, not trying to sound alarmist, but it is, we are anticipating cases coming to Gibraltar just because people crossing the border. How do you stop that? You can't self-isolate everyone who crosses through from Spain. So I think eventually a lot of people will get it. It's going around the world, but hopefully if we curb the spread and not put so much pressure on the hospitals, it can be better. That's really what they're doing right now.
We've
done a lot of precautionary measures, even trying to find a location for a field hospital, a separate location for an isolation area. That was announced yesterday. And we're basically telling everyone over 70 not to take the bus, not to leave the house if you don't have to, and stay at home. Really is the main advice.
Well, there we have it, you see. All put together in a wonderful sort of 10-minute-esque package. The advice of Gabriella Peralta. Sage and worthwhile following from that point of view. As I say, who knows where it's going to take us. However, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
I have, thank you.
And sounding pretty good, but of course, who knows what 7 days could actually bring. Will you, assuming we're spared, connect with your good self again in the very near future?
Yes, let's hope for for the best.
Yeah, and is this the first time you've worked from home in terms of putting the paper together, given that the editor's on holiday?
No, the editor's... Well, he's not on holiday. Ah. He's currently in London with the Chief Minister of Gibraltar, who's having a meeting in number 10. So, of course, everything happens in one go.
Well,
I'm meant to cover for him, and now I'm sick. So it's the first time doing the paper at home.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting.
It'll be wonderful, and we'll find out exactly how it's been going in about 168 hours from now. So that's the important thing. Onwards ever onwards. Taking us back to the 1980s from the 2020s, March the 12th to be precise, Thursday, March the 12th. As we said last night, it was wonderful little, devious little, cheeky little Russian people who obviously confused Harry to thinking that he was actually talking to Greta Thunberg. Well, expect more of that. Meanwhile, what price on eBay should the Queen's gloves ever actually go up there? Apparently, the state of play is that she's back to shaking hands without gloves. Richard, is this just she's given up and she's decided to actually risk it all?
You haven't seen my piece
online. Yeah, the Evening Standard. The long gloves have actually been used to hand out honours, but when shaking hands with Professor Mark Compton, Lord Prior of the Order of St. John, bare hands.
Oh. Well, the thing is, you see, that the Queen is following official advice, and she's showing at the moment what is permissible. Now, this, of course, may change, and as head of state, symbol of national unity, etc. I mean, she knows that every single thing she does, the body language, whether it's body language or whether it's wearing gloves, not wearing gloves, shaking hands, not shaking hands. Remember, it's banned at Westminster Abbey. All of this will be noted. And currently, the advice is to wash your hands, as you know, after certain circumstances, and also, of course, if you are elderly or indeed have an underlying medical condition, to take special precautions as and when sensible. But this could change, for example, today, so you'll see the Queen reflect this.
And on another interesting point, I see that, according to Bethan Holton, The Telegraph last Saturday, move over Michelle Obama and Gwyneth Paltrow. According to those in the know, the Duchess of Sussex, earning potential as a brand ambassador and tastemaker, is now off the scale. All hail the Queen of Influencers. She's going to do so well, I'm sure. And
well, of course, I mean, there was never any doubt about that, because, I mean, heaven knows, if you've got Oprah Winfrey, if you've got J-Lo, Serena Williams, I mean, all of these Hollywood stars and celebrities. They are huge names. Admittedly, the security bill is going to be absolutely vast. I mean, that's a fact. But nonetheless, there shouldn't overall be a problem there. There will, however, be a problem point of view of privacy, and there certainly would in the half-in, half-out situation, because what would have been tasteful, what wouldn't have been, and who would have been the arbiter?
Very true. And Max von Sydow, well, he had to go sooner or later, and obviously there are many people who actually say he never actually beat or actually achieved the greatness he achieved for his role as Professor Reinhardt in the classic Disney movie Black Hole from 1980.
I wish you wouldn't lower the tone. You're talking about a screen icon, his collaboration with Ingmar Bergman. I mean, this was extraordinary film. For example, films such as The Seventh Seal, where he plays a knight who plays a game of chess with death, and The Virgin Spring. I mean, a tremendously powerful, he seeks revenge, also set in medieval times. I mean, these were absolutely iconic films, and also, even if the greatest story itself ever told was an absolutely ghastly mess, which indeed it was, he was very good as Jesus. I mean, he had a presence that was it was unfailing. When there was Max von Sydow in a film.
Exactly. So for his role in The Black Hole with Disney's classic 1980, it's great. You know, and Roddy McDowall as one of the android voices, superb. I mean, you had Anthony Perkins there, Yvette Mimieux, Joseph Cotten. What's not to love, really?
Well, I mean, you also had Game of Thrones, didn't you? And one of the Star Wars movies. Mm. So, I mean, he's, put it this way, there were over 100 films that he appeared in. He never gave a bad performance. He was always not only reliable, but he could be a villain and a very nasty one, but he could also add a touch of charm, a touch of, a presence that you could always relate to. So however bad the script in certain circumstances, Max von Sydow was one of the great screen legends, and dying at 90, I mean, he really, really had a distinguished career.
Meanwhile, for those people who actually like wearing buckets over their heads and actually allowing for the fact that Crocodile Dundee is actually making a re-emergence this year.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. The true history of the Kelly Gang has actually sort of floated the boat of Richard Fitzwilliams in terms of reviews.
Well, it didn't float my boat.
Oh,
to be perfectly honest. I mean, just to mention the iconic history of this truly remarkable Australian legend. The Kelly Gang, unquestionably everybody, when they think of it in cinematic terms, I think they remember Mick Jagger and the extraordinary movie where, frankly, you simply couldn't forget the fact that, I mean, this was true, that he appeared at the end of his life at he was hung, but I mean, shooting at the policeman wearing a suit of armor. Now, if you do that in Australia and you are pictured in or filmed in so doing, I mean, these are iconic moments. And I mean, it really, really is quite extraordinary to see what they've made of it. I haven't read the Peter Carey novel. I mean, this is apparently key to what, quite frankly, you are going to expect. And if you don't know what you're going to expect, I mean, this is very much Priscilla, Queen of the Outback, because Kelly's got a dress on, you see, under this armor when he goes out shooting. Mm. As I said, they didn't kill him because the armor's bulletproof. What was the background to this rather extraordinary story? I mean, there's no question that everybody has heard of the Kelly Gang. It's, this was, quite frankly, something that was absolutely enthralling for the Australians. It's part and parcel of Australian life.
But surely, Richard, it's a bit like us seeing Robin Hood actually wearing tights. I mean, surely that's going to be, you know, all sort of transgender.
Yes, it is very much Robin Hood men in tights, which I have to say I didn't see, but it was a Mel Brooks movie, and anyone who knows Mel Brooks can imagine how he brought out the Sherwood Forest, Myth. I mean, this the real story set during the 1870s. Here we have, quite frankly, a mess. Why is it a mess? The answer is because it is directed by, wait for it, Justin Kurzel, who is a very, very iconoclastic director. Mm-hmm. It's a sort of punk take on it. I can only say that we had Mick Jagger, then it was followed by, and not much, or at least I would like to give some credit to Heath Ledger, Ned Kelly. This was a relatively straight take on the legend, no pun intended, of course, because, I mean, this movie is anything but straight. This gang spent most of their time wearing dresses. But the whole concept of this movie is that it's a sort of poetic, rather weird, somewhat surreal creation. The whole background to it, the visuals of the outback, the rather extraordinary story. I mean, it had all the potential in the world. We follow Ned Kelly when young, played by Orlando Schwert, and he's then later played by George Mackay, who was so splendid in 1917. Believe me, this is a very, very, very different movie. His dominant mother, I'm putting mildly, she's dominant, played by S.C. Davis, a very good performance, sells him to the bushranger Harry Power, played, oh, yes, 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 an Australian movie with Russell Crowe in it.
That's a surprise.
And then we get the fact that he and he's arrested, 3 years in prison for stealing a horse. His father has died whilst in prison in very suspicious circumstances. And then there are the villains, the constables, especially Constable Fitzpatrick, played by Nicholas Holt, a very good performance. But then his mother's imprisoned, and, well, the gang start robbing banks, giving to the poor. He falls for Mary, played by Thomasin McKenzie. And there's also a tribute, which I have to say is memorable, if I won't use the word well done, because by then I was exhausted by this movie, because I found it a mix of so many different styles. It was trying to say so many different things. It was if the Sex Pistols had appeared, it would have been raise your eyebrow perhaps a little bit, but not that much. I wanted more of a conventional story, I suppose, but I would have been open to whatever I got, because parts of this are somewhat poetic, and I mean that this is
Richard, I'm going to pin you down now. I'm going to pin you down and say, given the choice in terms of last possible movies to actually see between the true history of the Kelly Gang and the classic Nicole Kidman and Hugh Jackman Australia, which one are you going to go for?
Well, that actually is a very, very interesting question. I have
remember Nicole Kidman sings in Australia, of course.
I do, and her singing Over the Rainbow in the tones she adopts is not something that I would ever forget, and I would therefore, I think, have to go for that grotesque experience, because this one, frankly, by the end of it, I was
hoping she'd come in and do a chord.
It was almost comatose, because the problem is that Justin Kurzel, I rather liked his Macbeth, which got very poor reviews, but the facts simply are here. Most critics found it a fascinating cinematic experience, and I can see with all sorts of homages to, as I mentioned, silent movies and so forth, the way it's shot, and you could go on and on if it appeals to you. And if this is your particular, if this is the sort of movie, I wasn't expecting an experimental movie, and I didn't think that this experiment worked. But having said that, I can see why those who liked it did. And having said that, I would go very far to avoid both it and Australia. But if you place me in the, it's like Morton's Fork.
I mean, of course, the bottom line is we probably encourage at present, given the global situation, you just do your movie watching using your portable devices at home. Don't go out to cinemas, because who knows what could actually happen on that basis.
I think that when you, what may well happen, I mean, it's very possible cinemas could be closed, of course, as in Italy, I have no idea. But of course, if you go at certain times of day, you could be assured that, a midday screening, say, if you want to see a film on a large screen and there's you won't find a large audience in a lot of cinemas, and I think you'd know which ones they would be. It's just a suggestion.
Well, never mind. Good news is we've actually proven that there is still one single student and midweek driver still alive out there, because she's just arrived. Kira Alsbrook has made it.
Hello,
yes,
I'm alive. Kira. Hi, Richard, how are you?
I'm fine.
Great.
This is good to hear you say.
You're still alive. Still alive.
Yes, indeed.
And let's move to the Incredible Hulk. Or is it Mark Ruffalo in Dark Waters?
It is indeed Mark Ruffalo in Dark Waters. Now, Dark Waters is a very good film. What is so deeply shocking is its timeline, because, in fact, the film, climactically, only ends about 4 years ago, which shows if you fight a large company, you are going to be under stress, and it is going to take ages before they pay up, if ever. It's odd that we've talked about History of Kellyanne and this, because this is a tremendously conventional film, but very unconventional director, Todd Haynes, Far From Heaven, Carol. Here he takes a relatively simple story, and it's very like Erin Brockovich, you could argue, where, of course, as you remember, Julia Roberts fighting the Pacific Gas and Electric Company, or indeed you could bring, there's a relevant comparison to Russell Crowe in playing a character who was able to reveal the secrets of the tobacco companies in The Insider. It's a well-told, totally unflamboyant, very gripping story. Mark Ruffalo plays the hero, Robert Bilott, and Anne Hathaway is his wife, Sarah. You wish you'd see more of Hathaway. You see a fair amount of her. She's a superb actress, but in a supporting role here. It is a very good film, and what it does is follow Bilott's story. It's a corporate defense lawyer. At the beginning of the film, he's been promoted in a Cincinnati law firm, Taft, Stettins, and Hollister, and a farmer who knows his grandmother, asks him to investigate numbers of unexplained deaths of his animals that are his cows are dying. He's lost nearly 200.
Are they being the victims of malevolent, mischievous circumstances? Or is it just, again, big industry, big bullying industry, poisoning the environment and killing people?
Well, it's the poisoning the environment, but this is the interesting thing. When he actually visits the farmers, he visits the farm and sees what's happening, he looks back at the files. The point is he has to file a suit, and the firm stands behind him when he does this. Here's the thing. He's able to subpoena the necessary documents. I mean, this, as I say, is a film that will not appeal to everybody, because it's not one that's going to keep you on the edge of your seat with dramatic tension or with horror. What it does is tell a story, and it will tell the story very, very well. What DuPont do when they have to give him documents? I mean, the documents fill a room, and gradually he works through them. What he realizes is that the Environmental Protection Agency in the United States is supposed to regulate all chemicals that are used. But what if there are chemicals that they aren't regulating? What if he discovers it, and what happens then?
Richard,
what of his marriage?
What of the marriage?
Tim Robbins, a very good performance by, as his boss, by the way, who is torn between, on the one hand, being outraged by what's obviously happening, and on the other hand, well, he has a firm to run. And this puts Ruffalo, a very, very good performance, but it's so interesting to see someone in a... If I say this is a story, unflamboyantly told, visually depthed, but it basically shows an individual, if he perseveres, can achieve. Well, no spoilers from me, but it is fascinating. And the extraordinary thing is, it quite literally, the film comes down almost to today.
Well, there we are.
Because if you take on DuPont, And then, of course, the individuals who are having or using the water, where all this toxic material...
It's like taking on board capitalism. It's like taking on board capitalism one-on-one. We haven't even got time to actually talk about your trip to the Tate Modern to see Andy Warhol's exhibition, but that's okay. We'll have to move on from that point of view, because, Kira, it's time you put those last two questions to Richard, please.
So, Richard, have you enjoyed a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
Oh, yes. I mean, memories of Australia, too. I thought make my morning.
Yeah.
And will you be joining us again next week?
Without fail.
Exactly. Fantastic. Stay safe, Richard. And remember, if you're thinking of actually travelling to Europe, don't. any other mainland Europe parts. And equally, be very careful if you wish to head off to America as well, because Donald Trump doesn't like people travelling over now. He's putting the lockdown.
I was there, as you know, a while ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
I will return, but not at the moment.
It's very true. But he'll be back on Southside and Siren Radio. That's the important thing. Siren Broadcasting. Oh, Lord, it's very confusing. Richard Fitzwilliams will return. Why would you take the easy road? Coming up very shortly, Jordan Banjo and his mum will be talking about how their bond and relationship has developed. Because apparently, Kira, 44 million of people in the British Isles aspire to be more like our mums.
See, that's very inspirational. Or interesting, I should say.
Ian, did you always want to be more like your mum?
No.
You see,
at least you're honest.
My mum wanted me to be a concert pianist. That's not the conflict. I wanted to be the third division rugby player. My mother, God bless her, was a wonderful lady. Mm-hmm. And she had many very fine attributes.
Yes.
One of them, she was a really gifted pianist herself. Her uncle was her brother was a concert pianist. And apparently I had hands. I was long fingers, therefore she thought I had perfect hands to play the piano.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I had no other skills were necessary, and that's undoubtedly one of the worst piano players there's ever been. So.
Anyway.
Well, you know, it's a nice little revelation.
At least you tried.
This
you know,
is very true. Exactly. He did try. And clearly one day he might try again. You know, that's the important thing, because it's never too late to actually learn new skills, Ian. So how's Newcastle-upon-Tyne coping with the COVID-19? I mean, you're sort of smiling there, saying, well, as long as we have study kicks, all's well with the world.
Well, provided we can all go down the big market and not wear any shirts, we'll be all right, eh?
Yeah. Will you be allowed to travel to Canada, or were you not heading to Canada this year?
I haven't been for a while now. I'm finishing off a book at the moment, mm-hmm. so I'm pretty busy.
That's going to be good. Do you like fish, Ian?
Yes, I do.
Ah, yes, because...
Not fishing, but I like fish.
Apparently, fish is the food of champions. About 56% of the UK plans to eat more healthily this spring, and seafood is very high on the menu. 67% have actually cited fish's health benefits as the main reason for doing so. We'll be joined by seafish expert Mike Warner on that one. Possibly Denise Lewis, British Olympic heptathlon gold medalist, but certainly we'll be talking about fish just after 9 o'clock. So there we are.
Well, we are about to gain more control of our fishing waters.
Oh, Ian, don't get... You have to bring it back to... I mean, it's just relentless. I mean, control, etc. You can't own the land or the sea, Ian. It's not that you can't demarcate it on that basis. It's not set up on that system. You can't gain control over something you could never have control of in the first place.
We have international fishing waters, ours are stocked with a lot of fish.
Thereby speaks Ian Donald Trump Lennox with his views on how we can actually put together the world.
There's such a thing as a credibility gap, Alex.
I think you're using exactly the same metaphor and lines there as the president, current incumbent of the commander in chief role in the States. Anyway, let's carry on. Moving on. It's a fairly brief sort of little piece today. Ian, do you think that the campaign I'm trying to wage now to actually ensure that the current Premiership season should be abandoned and all of the Liverpool results should actually be cancelled because of the coronavirus actually should be gaining traction? Because clearly they don't. You can't count this season at all, basically. So
if you can award Newcastle an extra 10 points as well, I'm with you.
Yeah, there we are. It's an interesting line. And on that,
I think it'll be postponed, won't they? But I mean, it can't go on. I think people in democracies are worried about reactions to things like this, but Italy have already done it. America have stopped the basketball, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're heading... this has got to happen, hasn't it?
So... Ian, do you fist bump? Do you actually not encounter anybody at all? Do you actually sort of shake feet? Do you
actually, we enjoyed it they won't give up traditions easily. We keep on shaking hands. Mm. Somebody offers you your hand, you feel obliged to take it.
Even if it's infected.
Well, you don't know.
Exactly.
You don't know,
Kira.
No.
You're
shaking Mickey Mouse's hand.
At the moment, people are in sort of. At a halfway house stage where they're saying it hasn't reached its height yet, therefore it's safe to do things. Mm. But I think we've got to change that attitude very, very quickly now.
Mm.
I do agree with you that I think the football season's got to stop.
Yeah, absolutely.
What I fear about is if they do try and play the thing behind closed doors, people are going to pubs to watch it.
Exactly.
Worse.
It's just stop it now. Stop it.
Yeah.
Okay, having identified that, no time to even play Tessa's Tune of the Week for Ian, but you can always listen to the podcast last night. It'll be up later. It's all very confusing. Actually, that doesn't mean to say you can listen to the podcast last night. You can listen to the podcast of last night's show, because clearly going back in time, Ian, I think might be a little bit challenging.
That's amazing. It's Doctor Who stuff.
It would be very impressive. Dr. Sarah Jarvis is joining us with her advice on the coronavirus stuff and more. But Kira, last two questions for Ian, please.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning? Morning, Ian.
Yes, thank you very much.
And will you be joining us again next week?
I hope so.
Okay, stay safe. Say.
Well, it seems that even in the third decade of the 20th century, or even the 21st century, women's health needs are still being neglected, with women struggling to talk to GPs about their personal health concerns and suffering in silence with physical and emotional symptoms. Now, to talk about this, certainly the best possible media medic ever, as we're always delighted to welcome Dr. Sarah Jarvis, MBE, to the programme. How are you, Sarah?
Like that, I'm even better than I was before.
Always the truth has to out itself, Sarah. That's the key thing. Now, this particular survey that goes back to figures in 2018, one in three women experiencing severe reproductive health issues, yet less than half seeking help for them, etc. It does seem as though we're just not getting messages across here.
Well, interestingly, this is about women not going in to see the GP in the first place. Because I think one of the problems that we probably have here is that some of these issues are embarrassing. So whether it's pain when you make love, low libido, dry vagina, poor bladder control, leaking when you cough, when you sneeze, when you jump, when you laugh, and so on. All of those, I think, are things that even in this day and age still embarrass women. But I also think that there has been so much out there in the media, so much conflicting information about the menopause. And of course, when the stories about the possible risks of HRT associated with breast cancer first came out, there were people out there going, oh, well, for heaven's sake, this is all complete nonsense. Why do women need HRT? Let's face it, it's a natural part of getting older. Well, I'm very sorry, but actually, you know, kidney failure is a natural part of getting older. And if somebody developed kidney failure, we wouldn't deny them dialysis as a result. Or, you know, appendicitis is a natural part of being a human being because we had a fundamental design fault. It doesn't mean that we're going to say, oh, yes, let's whip out their appendix without using any anaesthetic. I think that's complete nonsense. There are treatments out there, and what we need is for women to come in and talk to their GP and be in a position, be put after that consultation in a position where they can make an informed decision about the pros and cons of all the options that are out there for them.
And presumably we're also looking to ensure that you get the most out of that appointment, whether it's actually in person or whether it's via screen, whatever the sort of situation happens to be, ensuring that you're planned ahead and you know what you're going to ask in terms of questions. Well, there we are.
So, in honour of International Women's Day, I teamed up with Theramex to call for women to have more honest and open conversations and to give them the tools that they need, things they maybe haven't thought about, which would allow them to do that. And you can download that from theramex.com. So basically, we start off with exactly that, making sure that you prioritise, you get to the point. One thing that women, in particular in my experience, do is they don't want to trouble me, so they make a list. So they save everything up and they bring it all in to one 10-minute appointment. Well, frankly, that is the perfect way to ensure that your GP hasn't got time to deal with any one of them in the full way and give it the attention it deserves. So please, if you're going to go in, don't go in with a list and don't go in and lose your nerve just after you get in there. You really want to talk about your bladder weakness. You really want to talk about your low libido. But then you think, well, I'll just see how sympathetic they are first. So you end up talking about, I don't know, you know, ingrowing hairs for the first 8 minutes. And then just as you're about to leave, you think, oh, this is ridiculous. I've got to ask. It is what I came in for. So as your hand's on the doorknob on the way out, you go, by the way, doctor, and believe me, your doctor's heart will sink. We've all been through that so many times before. Because all it means is, by that stage, I'm now mentally, if you like, moving on to the next patient, thinking about how late I'm running, thinking about if I've kept anybody waiting and so on. And therefore, of course, there's just not going to be the time to open up a whole new conversation. So do think about who you want to see for your treatment. Would you rather see a female GP? Male GPs are fantastic at women's health problems usually, but you may feel more comfortable seeing a female GP. Would you rather wait and see somebody you know? Or would you sometimes rather think, oh, gosh, no, I think on this occasion I'd rather see somebody fresh and, you know, see someone I don't know, not somebody who's known me for the last 20 years. And then before you go in, do plan. Think about what your symptoms are, what your worries are, what questions you'd like to ask. Write them down. Have the dates of your last period, how long your symptoms have troubled you, what they stopped you from doing, and so on to hand. And really importantly, to give your GP an idea of quite how much this is affecting you. Do think about what your "that's it, I've had enough" moment was. What was it that prompted you to decide that you couldn't put it off any longer? you needed to open up and speak to your doctor.
So really avoiding the Columbo line of, and just one more thing, as you sort of head out the door. I must admit, I'm very impressed with the line, you know your body better than anyone else, but doctors do have medical expertise and can bring an equally valid, sometimes different perspective. I think that's ultimately the whole essence, really, of the heart of a GP, isn't it, Sarah?
Absolutely. And interestingly, when I first became a GP nearly 30 years ago now, we were still very much being taught that, you know, the doctor is the expert. So the GP, the patient should almost, you know, not quite doff their cap when they came in, but certainly should be listening deferentially. Things have dramatically moved, and I'm delighted that they have, because the simple fact of the matter is, if you talk at somebody and they are not engaged, then quite simply, they are not, they're going to leave and they're going to go, well, that wasn't relevant to me, that was a complete waste of time. However, these days the internet has made everybody a, quote, expert. And unfortunately, what people often don't recognise is that sites that they've read, if you're on a particular area, it may well be, in fact, it's quite likely that they have a vested interest. So you might find that, for instance, a website which is trying to encourage people to buy complementary medicines or complementary therapies for the menopause is going to big up and write terribly scary statistics about the risk of breast cancer associated with HRT. So you need to come and talk to your GP. Remember that, yes, you do know your body, but your doctor does know the science. So make it an equal partnership.
And in terms of further support for this, presumably visiting the Theramex website would be the best place to go to?
That's exactly the place. All my top tips are on there.
As well as a downloadable fact sheet as well. It would be remiss of us not to actually mention the C word. It's probably going to be all around in all sorts of ways from that point of view. I know. But in terms of that, are we heading towards video interviews and various other bits and pieces? Is it a case of, we'll shortly be saying in Lincoln at least, bring out your dead.
I don't think anybody's going to be doing that.
Good.
But I do very much think that we are going to be moving towards perhaps having telephone consultations. Certainly, we're going to be moving towards anybody who's got symptoms, who thinks they might have coronavirus, checking the NHS tool before they do, because that will give you guidance on what you should do. If you go in and see a GP, at the moment, the GPs are not set up to isolate patients. So if you go in and see a GP and you do turn out to have coronavirus, unfortunately, a GP surgery is going to have to close. It's going to have to close for some days for a deep clean, and that is not going to help any of the other patients at the practice. So please do, if you go through the tool and it says you need to self-isolate, please do that, very importantly. And there are lots of tips on the NHS tool about things you can do to self-isolate. So staying home, not going to work, to school, to public areas, using public transport, avoiding visitors, getting friends, family or delivery people to get your products in. If you're living with other people, then make sure that you're in a separate, well-ventilated room and that you shouldn't be sharing crockery, cutlery, towels or bedding with them, washing things at 60 degrees centigrade and so on. So all those sensible tips. But if it says, no, you're not at high risk, please do not think, oh, well, it might be, they may be wrong, and go in and see the GP anyway. Because actually, GP services are going to be, they're always under pressure. They're going to be under even more pressure at the moment. So if it's told you you're not at high risk, please do go and see your pharmacist, because they would be the obvious person.
And that, Sarah, is why you fully deserve your MBE, and it's why the campaign to get it, Dame Sarah Jarvis, I'm sure will be starting in a matter of weeks. Dr. Sarah Jarvis, many thanks indeed. I trust you've had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today.
It was wonderful, as always. Thank you so much.
And we look forward to speaking again in the very near future. Take care.
As do I.
And off she goes, Sarah Jarvis there, doing some very sage advice. Now we move on to this line we talked about earlier in the programme. 44 million of us apparently aspire to be just like our mothers. Yeah, interesting. And three fabulous individuals to talk about this. First of all, a fantastic mother and child in all sorts of wonderful ways. The mother of Jordan Banjo, Danielle Banjo, is with us. How are you, Danielle?
Hi.
Excellent.
Fine, thank you.
Marvellous. And Jordan Banjo, of course, with us as well from Diversity and The Greatest Dancer Star. How are you, Jordan?
Hey, sir. How are we doing?
Oh, brilliant. And then, as if we couldn't get even more wonderful in terms of wonderful, the cream on top, it's the fabulous Aoife Davey, Group Marketing Director from One For All Gift Cards. How are you, Aoife?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Brilliant. Now, Aoife, did you used to aspire to be like your mum?
I always have. I have to say, I am one of those people that can say that they have been inspired by their mums. She was always a big influence to me before I was a mum, but now being a mum myself with a child of 20 months, I really appreciate how she raised us, and I am mirroring how she raised us now with my son.
Fantastic. Now, Jordan, we were speaking earlier to Ian Lennox, and he said that his mum always wanted to be wanted him to be a concert pianist, and he never quite managed to get up to that scenario, so he felt a little bit concerned about that. What about yourself and dancing? Did Danielle, you regularly sort of dance? Did she serve you all sorts of dancing routines to actually sort of head you through your own career?
You know what, my mum basically always said to us, you know, just do whatever you want to do, whatever makes you happy. So at one point I wanted to play the drums. I think she thought I was going to be a really talented drummer. Turns out I just wanted to make noise, so that didn't quite work out. But obviously we spent every day in my mum's dance studio. You know, my mum had her own, still has her own dance school. So we kind of grew up there, and my mum taught us till I was about 10, and then my brother took over and taught us as well, so... For me, my mum's just kind of always been there, inspiring me, looking after me, and just kind of pushing me, just encouraging me, I should say, to do whatever makes me happy.
And Danielle, I mean, looking from your own point of view, were you aspirational in terms of your own mum and in terms of Jordan's grandmum and so on?
Yes, definitely. My mum came from a large family and, you know, always worked incredibly hard and actually was... a stay-at-home mum, really, when she met my dad. So I've seen both sides. You know, my mum would be really regular with the cooking and doing all the stuff that you would expect a mum to be. So my life's been very different, and I've had to mix the two. But I actually, looking back, I actually feel quite blessed now because I've got to share so many experiences and everything, and my cooking skills might be limited, but...
oh, Mum, don't be hard on yourself.
I have kind of three dishes that I, you know, cook quite well. But, you know, we spend a lot of time together, and now with the grandchildren and everything. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, it's all about balance, and we don't always achieve that all the time, but it's just really special... unique situation that we have, so I feel very grateful.
Okay, we'll open it up. Kira Alsbrook, our co-host in the studio today, basically was very excited when she said, diversity! Yay!
I can remember watching it years ago.
Too many years ago. Obviously, yeah, Kira's still quite young, but what the heck? So, questions for yourself.
Right, so I'd like to know, to Danielle actually, how is it just a maternal instinct that you picked up just to be an amazing mum, or was it something that you had to grow and develop over the years?
Oh gosh, I think I'm still learning now. I think all you can do is your best, and I think that, I just think it's follow, you know, certain kind of rules in the sense that you should never force your children to do anything. You just want them to be happy, but you should... How do I put this? I've always said that, you know, as parents, there should be an automatic amount of respect because you're their parents. However, I believe that as parents, you earn more respect as well. I don't think it's just a given. I don't think it's something you demand. I think it grows as your children grow. And I think that discipline and all of that is really important. But, you know, just making them feel worth something and giving them confidence and all of that, there's, you know, just the normal things, really.
These days, with transgender politics and various other bits and pieces, asking you the question, Jordan, do you feel as though you're turning into your mum as you get older? Could it actually have a whole new meaning in terms of lines from our point of view?
I don't think I'm literally turning into my mum. I don't think I've got the capability to grow her hair. She's got some very long hair. I don't think I've got the patience to maintain that either. So I'm definitely not literally turning into my mum. But as a dad myself now, you know, I've got two young kids. I kind of notice myself saying things to them, and I'm like, oh, gosh, that's what my mum used to say to me when I was nicking sweets out of the cupboard and stuff like that. I'm like, what's going on? I'm slowly turning into it, but to be fair...
I'm sure you're just borrowing them, that's all, back in the time.
I'm still using that excuse now to my fiancée. Yeah. So where's my tweets gone? I'm like, I'm borrowed it, all right? You get it back soon.
Yeah, quite right, too. And, of course, we are heading round to March 22nd, so Aoife, what a perfect way, really, in terms of the One For All gift cards, to actually talk about celebrating Super Mums on Mother's Day on the 22nd of March.
Exactly. Why not let them spoil themselves with choosing whatever they want with the likes of a One For All gift card?
Which makes perfect sense. Kira, any other sort of thoughts for yourself?
Honest, not at the moment.
Just blown apart.
I'm still trying to wake up.
Sometimes, you know, the early starts, it's going to be a whole routine. Daniel, just returning back to your good self again, I mean, given obviously the fantastic success that Jordan has actually brought to the nation and indeed through the career, you must feel a tinge of pride when you sort of say, yeah, that's my boy.
Oh, absolutely. I still have moments. I still get very emotional when I see all the guys and, you know, they're standing on the stage and the reaction. And then when I see Jordan kind of just being him, actually, I think that's what makes it so special that, you know, he's up there, he's on primetime sort of TV, but he's actually him. And I feel very proud that work ethics and all of that, but just Jord.
Stop it, Mum. You're
going to
make me cry.
Stop it. Yeah, you know, honestly is the proudest. I take pride in that a lot.
Okay, well, we'll spin it round. Jordan, I mean, from your point of view, having that sort of supportive family unit, presumably it's really priceless, I would have thought, in terms of looking to measure that, in terms of help and assistance and motivation, presumably.
Oh, no, yeah, it's genuinely it's incredible. I mean, the nicest part for me is everyone's proud, you know, of their children, of their parents. You can understand that. But, you know, we come out on tour and stuff, and we can literally do a show. You know, if we've got tour days, that's how we've got 65 dates. So we're doing matinees on some of the days, stuff like that. You walk out on, like, the 80th show, and you're standing in the front, and I can see my mum at the back of the crowd still screaming and dancing like it's the first time she's ever seen us perform. And that literally, like, it melts my heart, because I'm standing there, like, oh, my gosh, like, she's knackered, she manages us, so it's not just us, she tour manages the whole crew, all the artists, sorts out everything from wardrobe to catering. My mum works so hard, and to see her still come out, like, you know, she could quite easily come and sit in the office, do some more work, and that's that, but she comes out, sees every single show, supports us. To be honest, if the show's rubbish and she doesn't like it, she'll tell you, you know. She's our harshest critic, but that's why I guess we are where we are, because we've got someone like her who, you know, always supports and encourages us, but also tells us when we need to fix up.
Superb. OneForAll.com, presumably AIFA would be the best website to go to find out further details about the One For All product.
Absolutely.
And Jordan, best way to stay in touch with the delights of diversity? How can people actually access your tours and so on and so forth?
Yeah, just check us out on all of our socials, you know, head tight Instagram and our Twitter. Instagram's diversity_official. Twitter's diversity_tweet. We've got loads going on. You know, we've got a tour we just announced. We've just launched an online dance school today, 20DV, so you guys can learn to dance. Maybe you have to subscribe, see if we get some lessons out of you as well.
Jordan, I mean, this could be a big challenge, actually, which I'll consider and contemplate.
I'd love to see that. Yeah, I can see it now.
I could see that, Kara. We'll just going to work our way through that. Jordan Banjo, Daniel Banjo, and Aoife Davey, many, many thanks indeed. Hopefully we'll speak again very soon. And I won't say Happy Mother's Day, because it's too soon from that point of view, but...
Happy Dance Day.
Happy Diversity
Day. We will
officially call this Thursday, March the 11th and March the 12th.
And then to Heat Dance Day.
Diversity Dance Day. Yeah. Exactly.
Thank you, guys.
It's a new thing. Take care now and happy Diversity Dance Day.
Bye.
Strange to say. never been laid so low in such a mysterious way. In the course of lifetime runs over and over again. But I would not give you false hope.
So still to come on Midweek Drive Morning Edition, we'll be speaking to Mike Warner about the importance of fish. William Sitwell will also, I think, be talking about some kind of fish. Steve Dickinson will be talking about Sci-Fi Scarborough. It's good to geek beside the seaside. And a former rugby player for England and sports pundit Brian Moore will be talking about how really we shouldn't give up on our dreams. Ever. Today, highs of 10 degrees centigrade, lows of 3 degrees centigrade, and it's going to be a sunny, breezy day as far as Lincoln's concerned. Now, fish. These are wonderful species that are all marvellous sort of things. We've got sole, we've got crab, we've got monkfish, we've got mussels, we've got herring. Why are they so important to a balanced diet? Well, we're delighted to actually talk to Ambassador for the programme at Seafish, the wonderful Mike Warner now. How are you, Mike?
Good morning. Very well, thank you.
Excellent. I love the line, see for yourself. See what you did there? Marvellous. An initiative to inspire the United Kingdom to cook and eat more seafood caught in UK waters. So talk us through this, Mike. Explain the importance of fish.
Well, as part of a balanced diet, seafood is incredibly important. I mean, the message from Seafish is that we should be eating two portions of seafood a week, one of which should be an oily fish, and the other could be a whitefish, it could be shellfish even. But they are incredibly important species for the building blocks of life. It's wild protein. It's very it's ethical. You know, there are no artificial inputs in the production of wild seafood. And as an island nation, we have some of the most responsibly fished and diverse sort of species and variety of seafood in the Northern Hemisphere, and yet we don't really recognise that, and we need to get back to, I think, the seafood eating culture of our grandparents, and trying to explore some of these species that we've got on our doorstep, which are so delicious and quite accessible, really.
Interesting enough, I think our regular correspondent William Sitwell will be talking about the importance of a fish in the latter part of the programme today. But talk to us, Mike, about eating fish and indeed that health aspect, part of a balanced diet, etc. Because I think people still underestimate the notion. I mean, let's just test it in the studio. Emma Street, how much fish do you eat on average?
I don't really eat fish.
You don't eat fish?
No, but that's because I don't know how to cook it.
Oh,
so okay. that's probably okay. just
okay.
For
sushi.
Me.
Okay.
Oh, I do like sushi.
Kira, are you a fish eater?
Yeah. No, oh. I love fish and chips, traditional fish and chips.
Okay, there you have it, Mike. A couple of sort of lines there in terms of loving fish and chips, fine. Another person concerned about how to cook it.
Yeah, well, so typical responses, really. And I think, you know, the message we've got to get across is that seafood is very easy to cook. Mm. You know, it's one of those foods which... simplicity is the key. Less is more. And really, you know, anybody can cook fish. It doesn't have to be elaborate. And some of the things that are affordable and accessible, like mussels, for example, rope-grown mussels, probably the most ethical form of wild protein you can get, and so easy to cook because it's literally, you know, these products come almost ready prepared. They're cleaned, and all you've got to do is just stick them in a pan, a bit of white wine, or even a bit of water, and just steam them open. And in seconds, you've got a delicious meal, which pretty much anybody can cook. You know, it's not rocket science when it comes to seafood.
And obviously DEFRA, of course, the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, have effectively sort of launched this whole piece today in terms of Suvish. Were you surprised by the top nine species that the campaign are focusing on? Or was it a case of, yeah, I pretty much figured that Sewell and Dover Slough would never actually get to the top like crab would do?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fairly representative of sample of seafoods there. But, of course, I was explaining in the studio earlier on, I mean, some of the markets I go to around the country, we can have up to 40 or even 50 different species of fish and shellfish being landed. But, I mean, in terms of that list, you know, crab is up there, and that's a very, very important one to be focusing on this year because we've traditionally exported a lot of crab, and we need to be eating that more in the UK. And certainly from our own point of view, crab is one of those products which is found all around the coast. And I think this year, especially with some of the export restrictions that we've got, crab's going to become much more available, and we need to be making use of that.
From the point of view of actually catching the fish to start off with, I think, Kira, you've got an interesting story you'd like to share about when you went fishing with your father, which I think Mike finds quite interesting, really.
I think you will actually find it quite interesting, Mike, to be honest with you. Basically, I was out fishing with my dad. He lived on a boat, he still does, and we're in the marina, and it was in the peak of summer, so you can imagine there was tourists around and caravans around. And obviously my dad was like, you know what, let's go fishing. And I was like, not really interested, but okay. And obviously I assumed that you have mealworms or maggots or...
To catch the fish.
Yeah, to catch it, you know. But no, he was like, no, we're fine. I'm like, okay. And then he pulled out a lump of cheddar cheese and put a massive brick of it on the end.
Which is the point. I mean, Mike, have you ever encountered anybody who would actually use cheddar cheese to actually catch fish?
Well, not cheddar cheese, but I was once fishing myself as a boy and I saw somebody catch a large cod on an apple core, so...
We didn't catch anything, besides a rat.
Fish aren't that fussy in what they eat sometimes.
Apple core cheese, amazing. That's a whole new world. And finally, of course, in terms of details, we'll just go through those the main species that are being focused on. Crab, mackerel, monkfish, herring, hake, rainbow trout, oh, indeed, freshwater trout as well, mussels, coeys, saithe, also called pollock, sole, Dover sole, and lemon sole. Where can people go to find out more information, Mike?
So go to the Fish is the Dish website and or my own website, thepassionforseafood.com. Go online. You can look at the Seafish website as well. There's a lot of information out there. If you're looking for shellfish, for the crab and mussels, go to the Shellfish Association of Great Britain website. Again, a lot of nutritional information on there, recipes and ideas and tips on how to cook shellfish. But really look for, I mean, you can buy fish online very well these days. If you've got a local independent fishmonger, again, he will advise you on what species that he sources from UK waters and what's in season and how to get the best quality.
Mm. Emma, any final closing thoughts from yourself? Has this persuaded you to maybe try some more fish if you can break those cooking habits?
You know what, it has actually. I think all this time I've seen seafood as something quite, I don't know, hard to cook and a bit of a challenge for somebody who's a bit of a beginner. But no, this has encouraged me to think about cooking a bit more fish into my diet.
A success story, Mike, you see, obviously.
That's great news.
It works well. Mike, it's been awesome connecting with you, good self, today. We will hopefully connect with you again in the very near future. I've got a final question. Would you like Climby Fisher or indeed Big Fish, Little Fish from Bob the Builder?
I think we'll go for Climby Fisher.
Do you know, I had a feeling that might be a good choice, actually. I mean, there was Fisherman's Blues that was a possibility, but Bob the Builder...
Well, that's a good one. Yeah, that's a
favourite. In which case, we'll throw in Fisherman's Blues with, of course, the Water Boys as a way to actually lead us through. A round of applause for Mike Warner, please. Yay!
Thank you. Good to speak to you guys. We'll be right back.
Fisherman's Blues, Waterboy is a good choice from our fishing expert there, Mike Warner. And I think he's very impressed to find that we're moving from Mike Warner's views on how we should eat more fish to, of course, one of those most amazing headlines that is just part and parcel of the William Sitwell weekly column in the Daily Telegraph, and the line, Amazonico makes sexy fish look like a parochial chip shop. It's given it a slap round the gills. Genius. Once again, I mean, just when I think you've taken that bar and you can't raise it any higher, William, you do it again. Good morning, William Sitwell. How are we?
Good morning. Yeah, extremely well.
Excellent. So Amazonico is clearly going to be a whole new term in terms of multimillionaire restaurateur Richard Caring. The man behind the Ivy Collection has just been Amazonico'd.
Yes, well, you should go there. It's pretty garish. Shocking place, but actually the food's very good. There it is on Berkeley Square.
Well, we shall bear that in mind once, of course, the present crisis has been lifted and we've headed off into all sorts of other areas. We were just talking, as I say, to Mike Warner, sea fish ambassador. And apparently the top species that the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs have actually been promoting for people to actually eat in terms of two portions of fish a week for both adults and children, one of which should be an oil species. They are crab, mackerel, monkfish, herring, hake, rainbow trout, mussels, coley and sole. Do any of those serve part of your regular diet, actual diet, William?
Well, I love mussels, and I, you know, if I see them on a menu, I quite like them as a starter, but I like them simple. I don't like sort of, you know, huge baths of cream. I think that literally cooked in onions and garlic and a little splash of white wine is all you need just to let the flavour of the mussels come through and the succulents and the... you know, that wonderful texture you get that's just the right side of rubbery. So I love that, and we eat quite a lot of crab down in Somerset. We have quite a lot of seafood down here when I'm down here. Hake, I haven't had a bit of hake for a while. Yeah, it's good advice. It's good to, it's always good to get reassured in terms of, you know, sustainability. I think the customer, I always feel for the customer because, you know, the customer's told eat fish, and then the next minute they're told don't eat fish because it's not sustainable. So, you know, I think if you can limit your choice, and if there's a, you know, that list is relatively small compared to, of course, what's on offer, but it sounds quite sensible to me.
The cinematic world in which you shared with the reader your trip to the deserted beach in Goa and the whole sort of sequence that happened about 33 years ago, so in the 20th century, is so good. I'm not going to allude to it because I just think it needs to be read. I'll pass it over to Emma Street. She can peruse it from that point of view. Because I want to move on to another little item which you've been doing, proving, of course, the multi-talented skills that you can actually bring to bear with the phrase, he's a nutcase. Yes, referring to Boris Johnson. Having another baby at the age of 55, what sort of loon would welcome in such a spot of aggro, especially as he steams into his middle years grappling with a heavy diary? William, you've been giving advice to our main man in Downing Street, I believe currently coronavirus free.
Well, I do then go on to say, of course, as you might imagine, mm-hmm. that those sort of rhetorical statements are then about to be put asunder because, of course, what could be more wonderful than welcoming a little bundle of joy into your life, however busy you are? And I think it affirms your humanity. It brings you down to earth. The prospect of...
And he has so many little joys of bundles that some of you may know. You know the bundle. No, I won't go there. Let's just step away from that. It's just a different line. He's got his own challenges these days, so let's move on from that. But yes, as you rightly say, relish that developing joy of a little person.
Yeah. My little person is currently in the kitchen. Terrorising everyone in there, but no, it's a complete joy. Everyone who's lucky enough to have a baby and can tell you, you know, when between moments of exhaustion, that it's a fantastic thing. So, yeah, good on Boris for knocking out another one.
Indeed. Interesting colloquial phrase that you use on that particular basis, but I see where we're going. Okay, in the studio we've got Kira, we've got Emma, both of whom might be hopefully engaged with the promotion, assuming coronavirus doesn't kill everything, in terms of your return to Lincoln in the very near future. Emma, any questions you'd like to put to William?
Well, I don't cook fish at all. I don't think I've ever cooked it myself. I very rarely eat it. What tips do you have for me to try and begin to know what fish to cook and what fish to buy, really?
A fishy question.
I always think that one of the simplest starters that actually is fantastic is if you create a little smoked mackerel pate. And it is so easy to make because all you need to do is buy those packed mackerel in the supermarket, which have often got sort of pepper on them. So they're already cooked. Then you take them home, peel off the skin, which comes off in one go. A bit of Philadelphia cheese. So just tear, basically fork the mackerel into lots of little bits, fold in the cheese, the generous squeeze of lemon, black pepper, and then toast as thin as you can cut it, Melba toast if you can, and that with a little glass of Chablis, glass of Chardonnay. Fantastic starter. If you don't really cook fish, then that's a way of using fish and impressing yourself and your friends about, what is actually very simple and very easy to make. The other thing about fish is really, people are worried about, they overcook fish. But you have to remember that, of course, we eat sashimi, we eat raw fish. And so, never be too worried about undercooking, because if the flesh isn't cooked, you can always cook it a bit more, but of course you can't cook it less when you've overcooked it. And I always think, fairly hot pan with a piece of fish, put it on one side for a minute or two and on another side, and you can't go wrong. I don't like having too much butter with my fish. The sort of these Meunier sauces and butter sauces, I think it skewers the flavor of a fish. But just experiment. I mean, mussels are very easy to cook. Some people have a bit of trepidation about them. But literally, you just put garlic, onions in a pan, a bit of white wine, and then literally at the end, you put the mussels in until when they've all opened. Any that haven't opened, you don't eat them. And that as well, it's a fantastic dish with a few chips maybe or a big, some crunchy bread. But otherwise, just, if you, go to the supermarket, go to your fishmonger and ask the fishmonger, how should I cook this? They love engaging with a customer. So don't be afraid of talking to the people. Go to a supermarket that has a deli counter. Go to a fishmonger. Support your local fishmonger. Ask them, okay, what's fresh? How shall I cook it? And they'll always tell you. And if they don't know how to cook it, then, they're not a good fishmonger. All fishmongers, worth their salt, know how to cook fish, and they'll have their favorite fish. But the thing is to, fresh, simple.
Sage words, you see, absolutely full. Yeah. It's like a personal consultation. And we have to ask the question, William, have the books arrived from China?
I think they're arriving next week.
Ooh.
Not yet. I'm slightly worried because my invitations to my book launch go out. I'm asking about 350 people in a restaurant in Covent Garden in the middle of April.
Yeah, right. So the height, the peak possibly of actually Operation Shutdown.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I think you have to just go on and plan these things and then just, cancel them if so. I mean, I was at an exhibition on Tuesday night. If you're going to London, anyone should go to the Cecil Beaton exhibition at the National Portrait Gallery. It's absolutely incredible. Celebration of one of the great iconic inspirational photographers of the 20th century. And, there was a lot of people in that room. Not too worried about mingling, put it that way.
Fist bumping, namaste signs, Vulcan edicts, live long and prosper.
Well, I had some meetings in London this week and we were just touching elbows.
I think that's awkward. I think the Vulcan salute is elegant. I think the namaste has got lines from that point of view.
Yeah, but I think namaste. I like Prince Charles was in the Telegraph today, a picture of him forgetting back to your handshake and doing a namaste. I think that's a lovely, respectful greeting.
It recognises the divine spirit in yourself and ourselves. It recognises them both. It's very important.
What's it called, the one when you take your right hand and you place it on the left part of your chest?
Well, we're seeing that demonstrated by Emma at the moment, but in terms of...
I'm having a heart attack.
I mean, I believe it was the start of the Roman salutes. We are about to die, salute you, which is not necessarily the best way forward. But, whether I mean, it shows the benefits of a classical education, clearly. Coming up, Brian Moore, former England rugby player, will be talking about not giving up on dreams. And this is an interesting one, William, because 35% of British folk have not actively done anything to pursue their life's dream.
Yeah, well, the sooner you get going, the better. I once read somewhere that life is a sort of, you know, it's a pyramid of risk.
Mm.
And if you do things or take risks early, you have far, far, you know, you don't have so far distance to fall.
Mm.
The higher you get up the pyramid, the greater the risk and the longer the fall. So the sooner you can do anything, the better.
The
and
higher.
You know, so I would just do it.
Yeah.
You know, go mad.
Exactly. The higher, the fewer. Kira, last two questions for William, please.
So, William, have you had an reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
Yeah, I'm sorry, we've barely spoken, Kira.
I know, I've been on the silent, I'm joking. No, I don't really. I'm a fish person, but not a major fish person.
Although it's fair to say that I must admit that the suggestion that Mike Warner provided to use apple core as opposed to what your dad was using to fish,
cheese.
Which was cheese.
Cheese, yes.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I'm on MasterChef this evening, and I'm giving the contestants a really interesting challenge, so you should watch that.
Well, I will watch it. I will. Okay. I love MasterChef. We'll watch it. We'll critique you.
Then you critique me.
This is good, which leads us to the next question, Kira.
And
which is,
will you be joining us again for more top tips next week?
I do hope so.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
historians look back over the 21st century, the C word is probably going to actually emerge like some kind of crazy virus from the ashes, etc. It seems as though cash might be going the same way, because the WHO, the World Health Organization, has actually advised the public against using notes as we possibly begin this acceleration towards a cashless society. Now, to talk about this and indeed deal with some of the challenges as well, we're delighted to welcome the wonderful Matt Goddard from Amaze. How are you, Matt?
Hello there, very well, thanks.
And, of course, Soul Trader Jake Shaw. So how are you, Jake?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent. Jake, if we can come to you first, is a cashless society going to impact badly on your own particular routine? I mean, 15% of small businesses, we see, don't actually take card payments.
I think we're all going to have to do that. And I think also using sort of cashless means that you can start to actually move your business a bit quicker. One of the reasons why I use the Amaze card system and the app is because I can actually do an invoice there and then, and I'm not waiting for cash to turn up. So I actually think we're all going to have to do it, plus the fact most people are now demanding to use cashless payments.
So, Matt, returning to yourself in terms of this gradual shift, though, I mean, Jake would seem it's relentless, it's inevitable, basically deal with it, get with the programme.
It does seem to be inevitable, certainly the way forward. What we've found from recent research and a survey we've run with small businesses is that despite the current situation with the virus, obviously, there are some incredible statistics about how companies are still relying on cash. And actually in the Eastern Midlands, we know that about half have actually lost business because if they haven't been able to take car payment.
And presumably there's also the knock-on effect that I suppose the cynic would actually say, this is just another way in which big government are actually trying to impact on the black economy and deal with any rogue traders out there, which might be seen as a good thing.
Well, it may be seen as a good thing. There's certainly something coming up in the budget, I would imagine, tomorrow, and there is certainly in countries and cities around the world various attempts to keep cash alive and well and various considerations around taxation. But what we found is that it's generally the perception that it's quite hard and quite expensive to take on card technology that's stopping people. So we've made an effort to really make sure that taking card payment is cheap and easy at Amaze, so we can really help them grow their business and concentrate less on admin.
And returning to the health aspect, of course, China and South Korea have begun disinfecting and isolating used banknotes. Again, this whole notion of possible infection sources from that point of view, I suppose it gives a whole new meaning to the term filthy lucre, doesn't it, really?
That's one phrase.
I mean, as we sort of continue onwards, I mean, just Jake, from your own perspective, I mean, also looking at the sort of cost to small businesses, a third of micro businesses who've forgotten to invoice a client in the last 12 months, which if it all builds up is around about £875 million in lost earnings. Is something like Amaze really a godsend to yourself in terms of being able to actually apply something which is fairly effective?
Well, I mean, I can give you a very prime example. If you've got like a regular client that you're doing work with month in, month out, quite often you can let the invoicing slide, and what happens is you then find yourself with a large, or at least a relatively large amount of money that your client owes you, and you have forgotten to invoice you. And the first thing they're going to say is, well, why didn't you do this earlier? Which doesn't actually help your relationship with them. What I've found with using the app means that I can actually do an invoice there and then. And it means that is taken care of and I can get on with actually doing the job properly. I think the whole issue about people not taking, people wanting to pay with cardless or cashless, as you put it, is that people are now very used to it. When I'm talking to customers and things like that, they're very used to using Amazon and being able to just click and go. And that's the issue, is if they're going to do that, then the kind of invoice goes out of their mind as well. So you've got to be on top of it. And by using this kind of system means you can actually take care of that and you don't miss the money that you need to sort of keep the business going.
And Matt, security issues? I mean, we're talking multi-factor identification and unusual sort of lines coming in to actually protect individuals' bank accounts from being invoiced more than once and so on and so forth.
Well, absolutely. Security is very key to protect us and to protect our customers. We've brought in cutting-edge biometrics. We have voice recognition as well. That means that people are secure whether they're using our service on app or they're moving onto their desktop as well and into accountancy.
So best place to go to find this amazing app. Sorry, I couldn't resist it. But in terms of the actual sort of line itself, would it be AMAIZ online?
That is the one, amaze.com, absolutely, for more about the survey and more about the services we offer small business.
Fantastic. Matt Goddard from Amaze and Jake Shaw, many thanks indeed. And stay free of the virus, gentlemen.
You too. Thank you very much.
It's almost becoming like a subsequent aspect of those last two questions, really. Stay free of the virus. An event run by fans for fans, Sci-Fi Scarborough returns for a seventh year with everything you loved about the first six, but with fresh guests and seven areas updated with content for the punter to peruse, involve and get immersed in. It's time to say Steve Dickinson, co-creator of Sci-Fi Scarborough, welcome to the programme. How are you, Steve?
I'm not too bad at all, thank you.
This is good. This is excellent. So, as I say, looking at the list, you got your Colin Baker, you got your Nicola Bryant for Who fans of a certain era, yay! You got Fraser Hines, yay! You got Colin Spall, yay! You got all sorts of other areas there. Are we worried about that little C word, that little coronavirus coming through?
We are a little bit worried, as you can imagine. We've been discussing it all week, We've talked to other event organisers and exhibitors, and they're all saying the same thing. We don't know what to do for the best.
It's interesting that I was doing the Stone Tapes with, again, friends of Fraser Hines last night, good friends Sam Stone and David J. Howe and the usual monthly Stone Tapes. And I've been booked to actually be one of the interviewers for the Sci-Fi Weekender, which is all set for Robert Picardo to come and join us and a whole heap of other fine folk to come. Robert Picardo, Kira, by the way, is the holographic doctor from Star Trek Voyager.
Okay. I'm aware.
But the same sort of thing, and that's at the end of April. You know, originally we'd hoped we'd do the coverage of Sci-Fi Scarborough and then use that as a bouncing point to all sorts of other bits and pieces. But yeah, I suppose it is uncertain from that point of view in terms of whether Eloise was saying, can we go to Sci-Fi Scarborough? I said, well, hopefully, if Uncle Steve says it's okay.
This is it. I mean, it's going to be taken out of our hands, the decision, eventually. A lot of event organisers have already pulled the plug or postponed their events due to public health safety. I mean, that's paramount, and it's got to be paramount. So we have been discussing this, but obviously, it will probably be taken out of our hands by the government, maybe even today, apparently.
On the flip side, Steve, what better way to ensure that everybody simply greets each other using the Vulcan salute of Idik? I mean, you know, that has to be the way forward. I mean, yeah.
I know, absolutely.
I hope you've started in the cafe. It's so much more elegant than bumping elbows, I find, really.
Live long and prosper. We've been doing it for years anyway, so it's nothing new to us. We're used to doing it.
So talking about some of the other, I mean, let's be positive, because it'll happen in some way, shape, or form, etc. We mentioned Fraser Hines, mentioned Colin Baker, John Davies are going to be there, Clem So, who I think was around last year from that point of view, Mike Quinn, of course, animator and puppeteer extraordinaire, John Leeson's with us, Michael Jaston, Terry Malloy, Colin Spall mentioned, Simon Fisher-Becker, much love for that, and then you've got artists, you've got Richard Piers-Rayner, yay, massive Borough fan, Richard, Grant Perkins, Gary Erskine, Graham Humphreys, of course, there, Sheikh Islam, Fish, you see, the Fish theme continues, you know, Fish is actually there too, and then a whole range of extras, authors, artists, Hot Alley, etc. It's looking good, and year number seven, very exciting.
Very exciting indeed, yeah, it's shaped up really nicely this year. Nice to focus on something as well, like Doctor Who, you know, something that's really popular. There's so many Whovians around here, and every year we get bombarded with messages, can we have Doctor Who guests? Can we have Doctor Who guests? You know, we're like, yeah, well, we always managed to get one or two, but this year it just panned out that we got a great selection, you know, of like classic and new Who as well, you know, so we could have interesting panels, you know.
As I said, I mean, our director of both classic and new Who, Graham Harper, I'm sure would be keen to join us as a location reporter, but then again, you probably turn him out, you know, if we say, no, we can't, after all, we let's move on. Emma, any thoughts or questions?
This isn't really my area, to be honest. I'm not a sci-fi.
Think New York Book Festival, but a lot more wackier and crazier, I mean, and fun in many ways.
Yeah. I've always wanted to go to a convention. I've never been to one.
And yet you claim you're a Doctor Who fan.
I am a Doctor Who fan in that I watch. I've watched the episodes, but I'm not a Whovian. You know what I mean? I'm a fan, but I'm not.
You are. Yeah, you see, Steve.
You are. Just in denial.
This is where we're attempting to get Hema outside of that TARDIS, to step outside of the TARDIS and actually embrace your inner who-ness. Okay?
Yes, it's very important. Do. Good. I mean,
how many episodes have you watched of Jodie Whittaker's era?
I've watched them all.
All of them. No, you know, all of them. So, I mean, I put it to you, Steve Dickinson. She's in every episode of the Jodie Whittaker era. Is that a fan or not a fan?
That is an ultra fan.
Exactly. He's an ultra fan. And Kira?
All I'd like to know, actually, is because I've always wanted to go to one, but I don't know what... I don't know, what would you... recommend when you get there? Like, do you have to go around everything,
as you can tell, Steve, we've got two people here are on the cusp of joining us, but they're just not sure.
I'm just a little
bit frightened there, Steve.
We need to know you. There's nothing to be scared of at all. I mean, they're the most friendly event you can go to, more friendly than anything. Going to the theatre, cinema, going to a football match. It's just that everyone's there to have fun. And everyone's there to enjoy themselves and be nice, you know, and that's one of our key words, you know, just be nice to everyone. And everyone is, and we never have any trouble or problems, and everyone's just had a lovely time. So you could just go around. You just wander around talking to people, looking at things, taking selfies with people. Mm-hmm. Loads of people always come in cosplay because we have competitions running all weekend. Mm-hmm. And so you end up with all these photographs. It's a beautiful venue, Victorian venue, so there's all these photo opportunities, you know, with lovely backdrops of the sea or the building itself. I mean, it's just great fun, you know, and everyone absolutely loves it, and they're really looking forward to it, so, and so are we, hopefully.
As I say, fingers crossed, we'll just see what happens. As ever, as you know, Steve, I think we've been covering you and doing features on Sci-Fi Scarborough for probably the last five consecutive years,
So, you've been very supportive, and we appreciate it.
Well, Steve, that's what it's all about, basically, on that point of view. And as I say, one of these days, we'll combine and develop all sorts of things like that, because we also have Eleanor Dean, who couldn't be with us today, but her dad actually runs the Norwich Sci-Fi Festival, NorCon. Very good. Anyway, Sci-Fi Scarborough is the one to go to if you want to geek beside the seaside. And I know people will turn around and say, oh, yeah, but what about Great Yarmouth? That's by the seaside. Yeah, it's not a patch on Scarborough. I'm sorry, but, you know, I know.
But Scarborough's pretty.
Exactly.
You've got geeks by the pretty seaside as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And you know, I know people might say, and Sam and Dave might say, but you know, we're employing you to be an interviewer at Great Yarmouth, you know. Yeah, it's not the point. I think Sci-Fi Scarborough is still a little bit magical. There we are. That's why we're doing it. Steve, it has been awesome connecting with you, good sir. The key thing, I presume, in terms of advice, obviously go to scifiscarborough.co.uk and people will be updated there in terms of what's going to happen. As you rightly say, it ultimately will be taken out of everybody's hands, apart from Boris Johnson's, presumably.
Yes, his blundering hands. Yes. Yeah. His blundering mitts will do their worst, as usual. Yeah. So.
That is quite a scary thought, but never mind. Yeah. You know, obviously we're not here to comment on the political side of things and so on and so forth.
No, let's not.
No. Got to ask the question there on a slightly different note. Picard, is it floating your boat?
Oh, yes. First two episodes, a little slow burner, but I'm up to date, and it is like, I can't wait for tonight for midnight, basically. That's what I'm one of those.
Yeah,
up at midnight waiting for the UX to drop. I love it.
As soon as it drops, it's bang, straight in there. It's very good. Yeah, and I have to say, the one with, and I suspect, there were little chirps of joy in the Dickinson household when you saw the return of Marina Sirtis and Jonathan Frakes.
Do you know, it was like they've never been away, and it's so believable the way, they set it up, you know, with the daughter and where they lived and all the security they had with the shield in it. Just everything was just, it was a really, really lovely episode. It was so great to see everyone again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, 7 and 9 as well, and then you've got Hugh and, yeah, it's just all really great seeing all these old faces popping up.
And one day, Steve, I'm sure Marina Sirtis will make Scarborough. She's had a bit of a tough year because obviously she lost her partner, Transcendent, which was tough from that point of view. And in addition to that, she was originally booked for Great Yarmouth, but she had to pull out of that. Likewise, Chase Masterson. Yeah. But it's what like happened. Hence the reason, the little rejoinder, sometimes you have to put the little plier, but subject to commitments, people will be there.
Yeah.
That's the important thing.
That's it.
Last two questions for Steve Dickinson, please. Emma.
Yes. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
I always have an amazing time and a great chat with you guys. I love it.
Ah, great. And will you be joining us again soon?
Whenever you want.
Yeah, we'll be there. And who knows, we might see you in Scarborough before too long. That's Saturday the 4th and Sunday the 5th of April. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
We don't know what could happen. It's like watching an episode of Contagion or Outbreak, you know, literally sort of unfolding before our very eyes. Good news, Steve, as far as I'm aware, no sign of zombies. So that's, you know...
Not yet.
Exactly. You know, it's fair to say, not that we're a political programme, but if we were to actually say who we should have as the leader of the Western world, I think the words Brian Moore would spring to mind. Isn't that right, Brian?
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. England rugby
player.
Well, I don't
lie as much as other people.
It's true. It's delighted to have you back on the show again, Brian. Superb in so many ways. Before we move on to chasing live streams and not giving up on those dreams and so on, do you think England have been doing reasonably well over the Six Nations? Has it been reasonably satisfying?
Yeah, they've been, you know, they had a bad first half against France.
Yeah.
And I thought that was going to cost them the title, but funnily enough, as France also got called for the old 80 minutes at Murrayfield, they're still in with it. But the problem is this, like, who knows when it's going to finish now?
Yeah, exactly. It's the old the virus that's coming through there, COVID-19, Lord above. It's very, very strange. However, that shouldn't stop us from giving up on our dreams, or indeed not giving up on our dreams, it has to be said. We've been floating this through the programme since we kicked off a couple of hours ago, Brian, and the general sense seems to be, no, we shouldn't give up on our dreams, we should pursue them. As William Sitwell actually just said, it's easier to actually start early than later, but still, it's never too late.
No, that's true, but I tell you what, this research, RaffleHouse.com research, which it surprised me, because, you know, when I was growing up, stuff like, I want to be a famous sports star, musician, actor, you know, stuff like that, that was what I traditionally thought was the dream. And And this research shows that they're more prosaic, including the top five, just being happy, in the top five, travelling, and owning a house. And the last of those was one that really surprised me, because I don't know about you, but well, I'm probably considerably older than you, but when I was growing up, owning a house was within nearly everybody who works purview. It wasn't something that, you know, was extraordinary. And now, for a variety of reasons, you know, money being the biggest one, it seems that a lot of that's now in the nation's top five dreams, which I don't know, but I wouldn't have included that. What about you?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, we could talk about, obviously, driving train engines, possibly in your own case, qualifying as a rugby football union referee. Was that an ambition that you always secretly had? You know, I want to actually take
that. No, not that. I just did that. Just stop referees saying, if you were a referee, you'd be able to. And I said, I am one, and I tell you, I knew you could see this anyway.
Yeah.
So stop. Do it, job.
Exactly. I mean, writing the novel, I mean, again, you know, what goes on tour stays on tour, beware of the dog. I mean, the whole range of things from that point of view. But yeah, I mean, let's talk to two young people, he says, not any patronising known in English, in the studio. We've got Kira and Emma.
Hello, Kira, Emma.
Hello.
Hi.
What are your dreams?
Hi. Oh, that's a nice question. I'm going to squash that and say I don't really have any dreams.
Oh.
I think when I was younger...
Yeah.
When I was younger, I wanted to be an actress, but I mean,
and you're now at the ripe old age of
21.
80.
Yeah, I feel much older than
She's
I am.
Grandma.
I am the grandma of the group.
Can I ask you a question? Do you mind?
Yeah, of course.
Does it surprise you that in the top five dreams of people in the country is just owning a house?
No, I don't. That doesn't surprise me.
Can you tell me why?
I think nowadays it's a lot harder for young people to even think about getting on the property ladder and even think about owning their own property. It used to be, you know, my grandparents tell me about how much they spent buying their house, and it's unbelievable. Yeah. I think my grandma got it for $6,000 or something like that. I can't imagine it.
It'd be lovely if it was like that.
It would be lovely, but I think now it has turned into one of those impossible dreams for a lot of people.
I mean that is really interesting. That's when I sat down and thought about it. You know, I mean, especially if you come out with student debt as well, and all these sorts of things. And you start on the... And especially if someone can't give you the deposit, because it takes you enough time to even save a deposit. And that's one of the problems. But that's one of the reasons why... I just want to tell you like this. RaffleHouse.com is the new competition. Mm. And if you buy a ticket for a tenner, you're in with a chance to win a guaranteed house worth $500,000 in London.
Oh, wow.
Admittedly,
with coronavirus, you may never get to visit, but you could self-isolate. Yeah, that's the important thing.
It's not like a lottery where it rolls over if someone doesn't get a number. Someone's guaranteed to get this. Hmm. So, you know, that's one of the ways. But I sympathise with you. I wouldn't want to be in your position. But then again, I didn't have this sort of opportunity with Raffle House either, so... Hmm. Both ways, I suppose.
So, I mean, Brian, did you actually want to be a top rugby player when you were growing up? Was it one of your ambitions that you were keen on developing?
When I was little and I first started, no. Mm. But then when I realised I was quite good, then I thought, you know what? What if I could play for England?
Yeah.
And then I started to dream about that. And it was strange because, you know, I used to watch it on TV and I used to see people in books. And then, when I got to a certain age, I was suddenly playing against them, or with them. Mm. And that's a really strange feeling.
Yeah.
Because you're overawed, because things you see on TV don't seem real. And then when you get on TV, you realise it's not all it's cracked up to be. But the fact is, I was, you know, playing against them. Mm. And from that point, I had to work quite hard. But then, fortunately, you know, I made that particular dream.
Absolutely. Kira, any questions for Brian?
I do, actually. You know, if people have, cause everyone at some point in their lives have a live stream, don't they? They always have an end goal. But what would you say to those people who have then said in the survey that they've never even attempted to achieve it? How would you encourage them to achieve it?
Well, I'd simply say to them, you're going to ask them why, I think. Because, obviously, if you never make any attempt, you've not even got a chance to do it. So I just have to, I'd like to ask them why you've not even tried. Because if you think about it, it's quite easy not to try, because anyone can not try. But then again, you know, what is a dream for? If you don't want to even take a step to do it. And I tell you what, I think this is a point. In and amongst, whilst you're chasing that, I think you find out a lot about yourself. I think you find out a lot about how to deal with failure, how to pursue success. I think actually it makes you a better person.
Definitely.
Quite literally, if you don't enter the rafflehouse.com, you won't actually sort of win the rafflehouse.com. rafflehouse.com presumably is the place to actually go to find out further details about how people
very
can...
Simple on the website. Yes, you can do that. Just a tenner, guaranteed half a million house.
There we are. Are you going to try it, Emma?
You never know, I might do.
Well, I'll tell you what, the odds are about 2,000 times better than the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
It's always good.
Brian, it's been awesome connecting with your good self, as we knew it would be.
It's lovely to speak to the three of you. Yeah. Have a good day.
Well, this is the critical thing. So we take it you've had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat, and will you come back and join us again after England have won the Grand Slam, presumably? Or some Grand Slam. Or I will.
It'd be a lot nicer to come to Lincoln when I don't have to go to Lincoln Prison. Not personally. as a lawyer, which I did occasionally.
Yeah, exactly. This is just all part and parcel of the rich chat. A round of applause for Brian Moore, please. Thank you. From one Birmingham legend to another one, Jeff Lynne. And Alone in the Universe. You're never alone with Siren Radio. Thanks to Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Dr. Sarah Jarvis, Ian Lennox, Jordan and Danielle Banjo, Andy for Davey and Mike Warner, William Sitwell, Steve Dickinson, Brian Moore,
Emma Street and Kira Olsbrook. And you, dear listener, that's it. We're wrapped up for the 12th of March 2020. Don't forget Tessa Snart's back with Sound and Country Vision this evening at 7 o'clock. Lots of other great things happening as far as Siren Radio is concerned. Earlier in the programme, Emma, we effectively decided that we'd actually say Happy Happy Diversity Dance Day.
Happy what?
Right, it's a long story. Just go to the headline.
What did we say? Happy Dance Diversity
Happy
Day.
Well, that's a mouthful.
Happy Dance Day.
Happy Dance
Day. Even though we kind of claimed that we would actually have a dance day today.
It's a dance day.
Well,
dance
we're just saying
always
it is.
A dance day.
We're sort of setting that line.
Okay.
Yes. So
I'll just go with it.
After three. One, two, three. Happy Dance Day.